We are a match, Gibbard! You have the strength, I have your name. Will you bargain? Still the dragon made no reply. Many years had the dragon sprawled on the island where golden breastplates and emeralds lay scattered among dust and bricks and bones. He had watched his black lizard brood play among crumbling houses and try their wings from the cliffs. He had slept long in the sun, unwaked by voice or sail. He had grown old. It was hard now to stir, to face this mage lad, this frail enemy, at the sight of whose staff Yavod, the old dragon, winced.
You may choose 9 stones from my hoard,
he said at last, his voice hissing and whining in his long jaws.
The best. Take your choice. Then go.
I do not want your stones, Yavod.
Where is men's greed gone? Men loved bright stones in the old days in the north. I know what it is you want, wizard. I, too, can offer you safety. For I know what can save you. I know what alone can save you. There is a horror follows you. I will tell you its name.
Ged's heart leaped in him, and he clutched his staff, standing as still as the dragon stood. He fought a moment with sudden, startling hope. It was not his own life that he bargained for. One mastery, and only one, could he hold over the dragon. He set hope aside and did what he must do.
That is not what I ask for, Yavod!
When he spoke the dragon's name, it was as if he held the huge being on a fine, thin leash, tightening it on his throat. He could feel the ancient malice and experience of men in the dragon's gaze that rested on him, and he could see the steel talons, each as long as a man's forearm, and the stone-hard hide, and the withering fire that lurked in the dragon's throat, and yet always the leash tightened, and he spoke again.
Yavod! Swear by your name that you and your sons will never come to the archipelago.
Flames broke suddenly bright and loud from the dragon's jaws, and he said,
I swear it by my name.
Silence lay over the isle then, and Yavod lowered his great head. And when he raised it again and looked, the wizard was gone, and the sail of the boat was a white flick on the waves eastward, heading towards the fat, bejeweled islands of the inner seas. And then, in a rage, the old dragon of Pendor rose, breaking the tower with the writhing of his body and beating his wings that spanned the whole width of the ruined town. But his oath held him, and he did not fly, then or ever, to the archipelago.
Chapter 6. Hunted. As soon as Pendor had sunk under the sea room behind him, Ged, looking eastward, felt the fear of the shadow come into his heart again, and it was hard to turn from the bright danger of the dragons to that formless, hopeless horror. He let the mage wind drop and sailed on with the world's wind, for there was no desire for speed in him now. He had no clear plan even of what he should do. He must run, as the dragon had said, but where? To Roke? He thought, since there, at least, he was protected, and might find counsel among the wise. First, however, he must come to Lough Torning once more, and tell his tale to the islemen. When word went out that he had returned, 5 days from his setting forth, they and half the people of the township came rowing and running to gather round him, and stare at him and listen. He told his tale, and one man said, But who saw this wonder of dragons slain, and dragons baffled. What if he...
Be still,
the head isleman said roughly, for he knew, as did most of them, that a wizard may have subtle ways of telling the truth, and may keep the truth to himself, but that if he says a thing, the thing is as he says, for that is his mastery. So they wondered and began to feel that their fear was lifted from them, and then they began to rejoice. They pressed round their young wizard and asked for the tale again. More islanders came and asked for it again. And by nightfall he no longer had to tell it. They could do it for him. Better. Already the village chanters had fitted it to an old tune and were singing the Song of the Sparrowhawk.
Bonfires were burning not only on the Isles of Lothorning, but in townships to the south and east. Fishermen shouted the news from boat to boat, from isle to isle. It went, "Evil is averted! The dragons will never come from Pendor!" That night, that one night, was joyous for Ged. No shadow could come near him through the brightness of those fires of thanksgiving that burned on every hill and beach, through the circles of laughing dancers that ringed him about, singing his praise, swinging their torches in the gusty autumn night, so that sparks rose thick and bright and brief upon the wind. The next day he met with Petrary, who said,
"I did not know you were so mighty, my lord."
There was fear in that, because he had dared make Ged his friend, but there was reproach in it also. Ged had not saved a little child, though he had slain dragons. After that, Ged felt afresh the unease and impatience that had driven him to Pendor, and drove him now from Lothorning. The next day, though they would have kept him gladly the rest of his life to praise and boast of, he left the house on the hill, with no baggage but his books, his staff, and the Otak riding on his shoulder. He went in a rowboat with a couple of young fishermen of Lothorning who wanted the honor of being his boatmen. Always, as they rowed on among the craft that crowd the eastern channels of the Ninety Isles, under the windows and balconies of houses that lean out over the water, past the wharves of Nesh, the rainy pastures of Drumgun, the malodorous oil sheds of Giath, word of his deed had gone ahead of him. They whistled the song of the sparrowhawk as he went by. They vied to have him spend the night and then tell his dragon tale. And when at last he came to Surd, the ship's master, of whom he asked passage out to Roke, bowed as he answered,
"A privilege to me, Lord Wizard, and an honor to my ship."
So Ged turned his back on the Ninety Isles. But even as the ship turned from Surd inner port and raised sail, a wind came up hard from the east against her. It was strange, for the wintry sky was clear and the weather had seemed settled mild that morning. It was only 30 miles from Surd to Roke, and they sailed on. And when the wind still rose, they still sailed on. The little ship, like most traders of the inmost sea, bore the high fore-and-aft sail that can be turned to catch a headwind, and her master was a handy seaman, proud of his skill. So, tacking now north, now south, they worked eastward. Clouds and rain came up on the wind, which veered and gusted so wildly that there was considerable danger of the ship jibing. "Lord Sparrowhawk," said the ship's master to the young man, whom he had beside him in the place of honor in the stern, though small dignity could be kept up under that wind and rain that wet them all to a miserable